On the show today, a former president pleads not guilty to federal charges.
Many Trump supporters that were already there, ready with flags and hats and messages, they're not really Republicans. They describe themselves as Trumpists.
Plus, an update from the Ukrainian front lines.
Reuters journalists have made the first independent confirmation that the Ukrainian military's counteroffensive is gaining ground. Now in its early stages, although Russia's government hasn't officially acknowledged the loss of this village or several others.
And South African firefighters are headed far from home to help Canada, where more than 450 wildfires are burning. Today is Wednesday, June 14th. This is VOA's International Edition. From VOA headquarters in downtown Washington, I'm Steve Karish. Former President Donald Trump, the first former president charged with federal crimes, appeared before a federal magistrate in Miami on Tuesday. He pleaded not guilty to charges that he illegally kept hundreds of classified government documents after he left the White House and then obstructed the government's efforts to retrieve them. Trump maintains his innocence and that the prosecution is politically motivated, and it is indeed a delicate situation for President Joe Biden. Trump is Biden's chief rival for the 2024 election, and the appearance that Biden was using his power to influence the election could be damaging. The AP's Sagar Meghani has more.
President Biden is determined to say as little as possible about his predecessor becoming the first ex-president to face federal charges. The president's repeatedly refused comment on a case that's historic for him, too, as the first incumbent whose administration has indicted his chief political rival. And the president's facing his own special counsel probe into classified documents. Number two House Republican Steve Scalise is among those saying the president weaponized the Justice Department.
Not a good day for the idea that justice should be blind.
But the president's adamant.
I have never once... not one single time suggested to the Justice Department what they should do or not do relative to bringing a charge or not bringing a charge. I'm honest.
Sagar Meghani, Washington.
The scene at the courthouse in Florida was the media spectacle and security show of force one would expect. VOA's Celia Mendoza was there.
It was a very particular scene. Since 6 a.m., you could have... many Trump supporters that were already there, ready with flags and hats and messages. They're not really Republicans. They describe themselves as Trumpists, and they say it really, really proudly.
And was it a large crowd?
It was actually a large crowd. We're talking about hundreds of people, probably 1,000 people overall throughout the day. Many of them with flags. Some of them were able to drive around the area. The police department, and this is very in contrast with New York, where they closed off the area. They had barricades. Here, people were able to drive around, have their flags, put music. So we really saw a lot of people there. Like I said, were some moments of tension and nothing crazy, though.
And after the indictment, former President Trump went to a Cuban restaurant. Were you able to go there as well?
We actually followed former President Trump. This is Café Versalles. It's one of the iconic places here in Miami. It's a staple of the fight against communism, especially in Cuba. This is a place that was perfect, especially remembering that he is in campaign. So there he had a different mood than what we saw inside the courtroom, where he was more disengaged, less emotional. Here he was with his supporters, with the people that will be probably some of them called to try to be juries in this case. And it was a different moment for the former president.
Now, clearly, this was a campaign stop, as you said. If all he wanted was a cup of coffee, somebody could have brought him one from any place. Does he enjoy popular support among the Cuban community in Miami?
He does. Not only Cubans, but Nicaraguans, Venezuelans, they all are rallying together. And what we saw was a lot of flags with the mixture between Trump and the flags of Venezuela, Nicaragua. We even saw faces of like Ortega, Maduro, the leaders of these communist countries. And he has been able to tap into that community, their feelings, and become one of their heroes. And that's something that we heard over and over and over. People do believe that he understands them and that he will fight for them and their countries. And they believe that if he's not elected president, the United States will have the same future of those countries. And that is something that is very particular with those that are following the president, former president of the United States.
Celia Mendoza reports for VOA's Latin American division. She joined me from Miami. Reuters journalists gained access to the newly retaken Ukrainian village of Neskuchny on Tuesday. It's the first independent confirmation of advances by Ukraine's counteroffensive. It comes as Russia has released video footage of what it says are German-made Leopard tanks and U.S.-made Bradley fighting vehicles captured in battle. Reuters' Matthew Laratonda has more.
On this dusty road in southeast Ukraine, Reuters journalists have made the first independent confirmation that the Ukrainian military's counteroffensive is gaining ground. Now in its early stages, although Russia's government hasn't officially acknowledged the loss of this village or several others. This is the village of Neskuchny in the Donetsk region. It once had a population of several hundred. Now its streets are silent, except for artillery fire in the distance. Not a single building is undamaged. Artem is a soldier with Ukraine's Territorial Defense Forces and is telling us the place was under Russian occupation for a year and a half. The Russians were chased out 3 days ago, he says, and quote, "These are Ukrainian lands." It's not clear how much momentum Ukraine's assault is carrying right now, or the losses for each side. This video, released by Russia's military on Tuesday, is said to show American-made Bradley fighting vehicles and German-made Leopard tanks captured from Ukraine elsewhere on the front line. Reuters couldn't immediately confirm the account, or the location, or when it was filmed. Russia's made other claims in recent days of destroying Western armored vehicles that were donated to Ukraine. In Neskuchny, three bodies litter the ground, said to be Russian forces. Artem says his unit watched how one of them died on a drone camera. The Russians were carrying their comrade and left him here. These are still the early days of the counteroffensive. Tens of thousands of fresh Ukrainian troops and hundreds of Western armored vehicles are yet to be committed to the fight. But Russia has also had months to prepare, with multiple defensive lines and fallback positions, meaning Ukraine's advance doesn't necessarily mean it's breached through.
That's Reuters' Matthew Laratonda reporting. We're also following these stories from around the world. Refugees and asylum seekers in Malawi say they fear being deported following steps by the government to apprehend refugees wanted in their home countries. India and Pakistan are bracing for the first severe cyclone of the season, expected to hit their coastal regions by the end of this week. The storm is aiming at Pakistan's Sindh province and the Indian state of Gujarat. Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi said during a visit to Venezuela on Monday that the two countries have common interests and common enemies. Raisi said Iran and Venezuela want to boost trade from about $3 billion to $20 billion per year. Skyscrapers, bridges, and other landmarks in Seoul are lit up in purple as the country begins celebrating the 10th anniversary of K-pop superstars BTS. This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Researchers in a Columbia University-led study found that a lack of the amino acid taurine is one of many issues that drives the aging process in animals. Taurine is a nutrient that is naturally produced in the body and can be found in many foods, especially proteins like meat and fish. Along with this finding, the researchers also found that supplements of taurine can slow the aging process in animals such as worms, mice, and monkeys, and increase the healthy lifespans of middle-aged mice by up to 12%. The researchers' findings have been published in the journal Science. In a university press release, the study's leader, Vijay Yadav, says that, quote, "For the last 25 years, scientists have been trying to find factors that not only let us live longer, but also increase health span, the time we remain healthy in our old age." I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
It's VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Karish. At the White House on Tuesday, President Joe Biden met with Jens Stoltenberg, the Secretary General of NATO, and Biden called for NATO members to contribute more as the alliance is increasingly on edge by Russia's invasion of Ukraine, a neighbor to four NATO members. The two met ahead of a July summit that will be dominated by the conflict in Ukraine and intensifying speculation over who will replace Stoltenberg after his term ends later this year. White House correspondent Anita Powell reports.
President Joe Biden on Tuesday underscored U.S. commitment to supporting Ukraine against Russian aggression, meeting with NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg and announcing $325 million more in military aid ahead of an annual summit of NATO members in Lithuania's capital in July. Biden praised NATO's work, but also urged its 31 members to do more to meet a 2014 pledge to spend at least 2% of their GDP on defense.
We've strengthened NATO's eastern flank, made it clear that we'll defend every inch of NATO territory. I say it again, the commitment of the United States to NATO, Article 5, is rock solid.
Stoltenberg, who will leave office later this year, said the July summit will focus on how NATO can step up its support for Ukraine, which has managed to stave off a Russian takeover and recently launched a counteroffensive.
The support that we are providing together to Ukraine is now making a difference on the battlefield as we speak, because the offensive is launched and Ukrainians are making progress, making advances. It's still early days, but what we do know is that the more land Ukrainians are able to liberate, the stronger hand they will have at the negotiating table.
Stoltenberg has also been making the rounds in Washington, with Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell saying Tuesday that Stoltenberg told him he has invited representatives from non-NATO countries, Japan and South Korea, to the summit in Lithuania. McConnell also said Stoltenberg expects Sweden to formally join the alliance at the July summit. NATO watchers say the organization's unity will hinge on a new leader. And on this topic, Washington and Stoltenberg are quiet. Anita Powell, VOA News, the White House.
On Tuesday, Australia's National Science Agency unveiled a new blueprint to ensure the nation's food supply is secure and resilient. The Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organization has said the sector faces serious challenges, including climate change and disruptions to supply chains. From Sydney, Phil Mercer has the story.
More than 70% of Australia's agricultural production is exported overseas, according to government data, helping to feed an estimated 70 million people around the world and at home. It makes Australia a key global food producer. But CSIRO, the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organization, is warning that the nation's food systems must change to remain sustainable in the future. Australia's National Science Agency has identified several key threats to food production: recent climate extremes, the COVID-19 pandemic, and geopolitical uncertainties. It's also identified other critical challenges, including increasing demand, as well as disruptions to supply chains and the workforce. It's unveiled a new plan called Reshaping Australian Food Systems to make food production more sustainable, nutritious, productive, and resilient. Better access to healthy diets and minimising food waste are among five key areas identified in the CSIRO blueprint. The agency has estimated that a third of Australia's food production goes to waste each year. Australia's agricultural activity is determined by the climate, the availability of water, and the proximity to markets. Livestock grazing takes place across the country, while horticulture, the production of fruit, vegetables and flowers, and cropping, that includes the planting of wheat and barley, are generally located in coastal regions. In 2021-22, exports of Australian agricultural, fishery and forestry products were worth $51.2 billion, according to official records. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
South Africa is deploying a second contingent of 200 firefighters this week to help fight the Canadian wildfires that last week spread a thick haze and smoke across the northeastern United States. There are 450 active fires, with one new fire reported on Monday. Trevor Abrams, managing director of the South African Firefighters in Canada, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam the deployment of South African firefighters comes amid an urgent request from the Canadian Interagency Forest Fire Center.
The first team of 200 firefighters and 14 managers from working on fire in South Africa is actually on a fire close to Edson, which is about 180 kilometers to the west of Edmonton. And it's getting so bad there, they've just had to impose evacuation orders on Edson. So our firefighters are at two complexes called the Deep Creek Complex and the Pembina Complex. So they've been there since Tuesday, being part of a larger team of Americans, Canadians, fighting these particular fires. Unfortunately, the weather went a bit bad in terms of fires, getting hotter, drier. And right now, we've just had a little bit of rain, but then the wind has been picking up. So conditions are still quite hazardous.
What kind of dangers, hazards are your firefighters facing where they're located right now?
Well, the most immediate one is just very, very rapid flare-ups that happen. And in fact, 2 days ago, all the firefighters were withdrawn from the fire line because of the wind conditions, which were growing and becoming variable. And that happens very suddenly. But also within the environment that they are operating, extinguishing all the fire, many of the burnt trees are very vulnerable to being blown over. So, you know, these trees don't have very deep root systems. So as much as they're busy probing all the ground to put out all the embers, these trees in a little bit of wind can actually topple over.
What are the prospects of getting this huge wildfire under control?
Well, the weather conditions, and, you know, this is part of the product of climate change, is drier and hotter than it's been for this time of the year ever, very early in the fire season. Typically, the Canadian fire season goes up to September. But the sort of strategy in terms of dealing with these large fires is to first of all try and isolate and protect property and lives. And obviously, some cases it's just not possible, and you have to have evacuation orders. In some areas in Quebec, you just had the fire sweep right through the town. So there's been a lot of homes and dwellings and structures lost through this process. And then the second would be to try and develop a perimeter around the fire and protect that.
Trevor Abrams is managing director of the South African Firefighters in Canada. He spoke with VOA's Carol Van Dam. Blood banks in Cameroon are usually pretty close to empty. That's because of a cultural taboo against blood donations, so officials there are trying to persuade people to move past those beliefs amid an increased demand for blood in hospitals and on the front lines where soldiers are fighting separatists and Boko Haram militants. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from the capital, Yaoundé, as Cameroon mobilizes for World Blood Donor Day on June 14th.
The government says blood needs in Cameroon are increasing due to the separatist conflicts in the country's western regions and fighting with Boko Haram militants on the northern border with Nigeria. This year, government officials, health workers, and aid agencies took to the streets ahead of World Blood Donor Day on June 14, trying to convince people to donate blood and save lives. Ruth Abeng of the Cameroon Medical Council, an association of Cameroonian doctors, is taking part in the campaign.
Les gens viennent donner parce qu'ils sont obligés de donner pour leurs proches.
She says there are very few voluntary blood donors in Cameroon. Abeng says some people are compelled to donate blood only when they see their sick relatives and friends who are in need of blood dying. She says it is disheartening to see patients dying because some of their relatives believe that blood donation is mystical. Some Cameroonians believe that if they give blood, the recipients will receive any good luck and success they have had in life. Others say God will punish them if they donate blood to an evil person. The government says such beliefs are unfounded and people should not be afraid to donate blood. The Ministry of Health also says donated blood is not sold, as some people erroneously believe. Blood that is donated is stored in banks and transfused to people in need, the government says. Hospitals say patients pay a fee of about $50 for the hospital to test the blood and make sure it is safe to use. The government gives donors about $10 in a bid to encourage more donations. Cameroon says it expects to raise about 20,000 pints of blood by June 14. Hospitals say the amount will not be enough to meet the country's needs, but that it will reduce pain and dying. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
And that'll do it for today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thanks for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, visit us online at voanews.com and follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Stay safe and have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Speaking in Riyadh at a ministerial meeting for the Global Coalition to Defeat ISIS, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said the group, now expanded to 86 members, has had marked success since 2014.
Together, we have achieved the territorial defeat of ISIS in Iraq and Syria. We've taken out or captured its leadership. We've prevented large-scale attacks. And we've invested billions in stabilizing liberated areas and rebuilding the region.
But the fight is not yet finished. Urgent areas must be addressed to ensure the terror group's enduring defeat, he said. Among them is stabilization assistance in Iraq and Syria.
Poor security and humanitarian conditions, lack of economic opportunity, these are the fuel for the kind of desperation on which ISIS feeds and recruits.
Secretary Blinken announced the coalition is holding a stabilization pledge drive of a little more than $601 million and that the United States is committing $148.7 million to the fund. Another urgent issue is the need for repatriation of foreign ISIS members and their families from displaced persons camps like Al-Hol in Syria.
Failure to repatriate foreign terrorist fighters risks the possibility that they could again take up arms and attempt to restore ISIS's so-called caliphate, terrorize communities that we're working to stabilize and rebuild, and potentially threaten our homelands.
Secretary Blinken noted that Al-Hol now hosts 50,000 displaced persons, most of whom are women and children, half of whom are 12 years old or younger.
Leaving these children in camps condemns them to lives marked by danger, the denial of basic health care, the denial of education, the denial of hope.
Another area of focus is the evolving terrorist threat, particularly throughout the Sahel and West Africa. The United States has pledged $130 million to enhance counterterrorism capacity in sub-Saharan Africa, including more than $22 million for partnerships with coastal West Africa. Secretary Blinken also called for vigilance regarding the threat that ISIS Khorasan poses in the region surrounding Afghanistan. The United States is bolstering the coalition's collective efforts with more than $30 million in new counterterrorism programs for Central Asia. Recent years have demonstrated the progress that we can achieve with steadfast determination, declared Secretary Blinken. He expressed confidence that the coalition's collective commitment to defeat ISIS will finally eliminate the scourge of terrorism around the world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.